You're watching The Sports Objective, the podcast for Pirates.
Welcome into the Coach's Kid here on the Sports Objective, episode 4 of this particular show. This is the first episode we've turned out, you know, here in the last several months, but it's good to be back. And, you know, just if you've not seen the Coach's Kid before here on the Sports Objective, just our first three guests, we had Tommy Bowden, obviously the son of the legend Bobby Bowden. We also had Kate Holland Baynard, who's the daughter of former East Carolina AD, UVA, and Davidson AD, as well as legendary UVA head men's basketball coach Terry Holland. And then our third show, our most recent show, was Ted Pardee, the son of the late Jack Pardee, who was such a successful NFL and college head football coach. And tonight, we're sticking with that football theme. We have with us the daughter of Les Miles. And that is Smacker Miles. Smacker, we appreciate your time this evening.
Of course. I'm happy to be here.
Absolutely. And, looking forward to, talking about what it was like growing up in the Miles household. And obviously, so much background in sports, not only your dad in football, but then your mom. She was a college basketball player at Central Michigan. And then yourself, you played or swam for the University of Texas. So just take us back to your childhood. I know you were born in Ann Arbor, but then when you were just, about 5-6 months old, you moved to Stillwater for the first of two times.
Yeah, Stillwater was my first memories, at least. And we had two great stops in Stillwater. So that was a place that was really good in the Miles family. But I think growing up in my house, there was no option but to be an athlete. So you talk about the fact that I ended up at Texas, but my siblings played college sports as well. And I think once my mom retired and was a full-time mom, she was kind of the coach of the kids club.
So your first memories were in Stillwater. How old were you at that time?
I was 0-9 months old, like you said, until 4 years old.
Okay. So do you have memories of being in Stillwater?
I do. Yes. When I was little, I remember honestly being at football practice, and then at Cowboys, I remember more. So it was the back end of 4. I remember a going away party that we had at Eskimo Joe's with all the athletic department right before we moved.
So your dad left there and was it tight ends coach for the Cowboys?
Yes.
For Dallas?
Yeah. He was tight ends at Cowboys and then back to Oklahoma State as the head coach.
Okay. So the second time at Oklahoma State, talk about that. How old were you at that time?
We moved back when I was 7. I was 7 to 10. And so those were kind of it was the first time I really had like memories of the whole stop or like remembered every part of life at that stop.
So what was it like for you as 7 to 10 years old? Did you grasp the concept of what a big deal it was that now your dad was a Division I head coach?
So in Stillwater, it was such a wonderful place. And they had won. We won 4 games the first year we were there, but at the end of the season, we beat OU. So I didn't know that people got upset with football coaches from 7 to 10. And wow, what a protected aspect of childhood that was. I thought everyone just liked my dad and that they always would. So we had a great time in Stillwater. I remember riding those Razor scooters on campus and doing running races outside the Eskimo Joe's and all the restaurants in Stillwater. So we had a great time. Stillwater is a wonderful community. The people are so sweet. It's a college town. You get that true college town vibe where the energy is high and there's a lot of optimism in the place. And we had a great time there. I mean, overall, it was absolutely wonderful.
And when we were lining up this interview, we actually just talked about this before we went live, how we had Kate Holland Baynard on, and the daughter or one of the daughters of Terry Holland, and legendary coach at the University of Virginia in men's basketball. And she was talking about the relationship that she had with Mike Krzyzewski's daughters, and then also referencing what you just said, that it was so hard to hear people talking negatively about her father. you know, when they would lose a big game to the University of North Carolina or Duke or whoever it may be. And that was something that, you know, having that relationship with another coach's family, that certainly benefited her to learn how to handle that.
Yeah, I think coaches' kids have a really special bond. They're the only ones that really know what it's like. And for us, we went to school on LSU's campus. So that entire time, coaches' kids would get into the private school on campus. And so every time
Hold on. There's a private, like, elementary, middle school on campus.
The LSU. Lab school. Yeah, K through 12. So any new coach is good. It didn't matter how old they were.
Is it? So who goes there? It's not just for the coach's children.
No, it was the lab school on campus. So we would have student teachers from the university. And then it was kind of a normal private school in some aspects. And it was actually an interesting dynamic. It was a hybrid public-private. So we did private standardized testing. And it was one of the less private schools in Baton Rouge, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
But still had that component. So it was fun because they would let coaches' kids start halfway through the year. So that's what I did when we moved there. And then one of my best friends in life to this day was the only one that did the move with us from Oklahoma State to Baton Rouge. So we actually moved and started a new school together as if she was my own sibling. And I think that bond and knowing, especially once we got to Baton Rouge, and it was a community that really had a lot to say about football and was bought in as far as having an opinion about it. It was nice to have those coaches' kids and know that you had your siblings, but you also had extended siblings to be walking into school with if there was a tough game over the weekend.
Right. So you were friends with the assistant coach's children.
Absolutely. Always best friends.
Yeah. So it was easy to bond there. I'm just fascinated by that concept at LSU of a K through 12. I'm sure that's not the only one like that. There's probably many. It's just a new concept to me. But talk about, what year did your dad take over to LSU?
It was 2005.
Okay, so we're just going to fast forward a couple of years. Jump ahead to 2007, the national championship year. How old were you when that happened?
I was 13.
13. Okay, so you're just becoming a teenager. Yeah. You're what, seventh grade?
Around there. I should know that. I don't know that.
So what was that like for you being a 13-year-old? Your dad, you know, at LSU, they just won the national championship. So now everybody in Baton Rouge loves your dad for that time being. So what was that like? What was that excitement like to be a part of or at least your father leading a program to a national championship? I'm about to say you were a part of a national championship program. I don't guess you did much. But what was it like being a part of it? Because you were a part of it on the peripheral.
Yeah. I think this is one of my most laughable childhood memories because, you know, you're just naive and you don't know anything else. And when people ask me what it was like, it's like, well, it was normal to me because I didn't know anything else. So I remember being very, very excited about getting a purple juicy sweatsuit for the game. That's what I really wanted. I wanted to have the all purple fit. And I remember we woke up on the day of the game and I went to practice with the club team in New Orleans. And it was a random team. I obviously wasn't on that team full time. And I got back to the hotel room and there's, you know, people gathered around and waiting to see my dad and greet him, extended family members and stuff. And he was like, how's swim practice? And he wanted to hear all about it. He wanted to know if I beat the new competition and what the set was. And so for me, it was such a normal day because it was another game day. And I would go to practice and I would see the Tigers and I would think that they were invincible. I didn't know any better than to think that we were going to do that all the time. And my dad was very humble. So I never really felt like it wasn't about him. The team won. And that's just kind of how we saw it. So it was a bowl game, but we had been to bowl games at that point. And it's fun to look back at how normal they made that seem in a way that kept me really grounded. And you know, I feel like it never got to us as far as like getting to your head kind of, or feeling like it was about you. And I think that that's an important part of who I am.
Do you actually remember swim practice from that day?
I remember the pool. I remember the people I was racing against. I remember the in-state Louisiana competition, but not people I practiced with day to day. So I absolutely do remember that. And I remember people kind of wanting to talk to my dad and him just really being genuinely interested in swim practice.
That's good. It probably helped him too, to get his mind on normalcy, what you did that day, rather than just focusing on the game nonstop.
Yeah, exactly. And we would help him do his game boards. He would write like kind of a motivational talk on a big whiteboard, and they would wheel it into the hotel room on any away game. So it felt like a normal away game to me.
Well, I was going to follow up on that. When did you realize, at what point, how many years later did you realize what your dad had accomplished by winning a national championship?
The stress crept up. It was very just consistent over that time until the end. And I think even in the end, I didn't make sense of even the firing for a little while, because I would see people get jobs that, the next year, in the years to come, with, not having had an amazing season, they would get a new job, or they would just keep a job that I'd be like, wait, what? That was kind of an iffy year. And so I think it took me a long time to really understand how hard it is to do that. And just the great teams that it's elusive and they just miss a couple of times that they were close and it never happens. So it's still really incredible to know that that actually happened, and to look back at those naive memories and realize how different it really was.
Yeah.
Smacker, before we talk more about your dad's time in Baton Rouge, kind of going back from that transition from Stillwater to Baton Rouge, I guess what you were about fifth grade or so, about to transition into middle school. So that's another aspect of being a coach's kid, the moves. You'd obviously made that transition from Dallas to Stillwater, a place that you were a little familiar with, from when you were 2-3 years old. But, obviously you had made friends in elementary school. What was that like, having to move away, and how did you deal with that aspect?
Guys, I don't think I've ever talked about this publicly. I was not ready for that move. It was halfway through fourth grade. I do remember this grade on this one. And I went to Miss Guyot's class in Baton Rouge, and I went in, Nike jumpsuit, sporty girl, like my hair was slicked back. I did not own a bow. And I walked into a private school in Baton Rouge where all the girls had the big bows on their hair, and they all, were girlier than me. I was a little tomboy at the time, and they were also ahead of me in school. And so I think that's one of the things that people don't really think about with the moves. They think about the social aspect, but they don't think about the actual, whether it's academic or athletic aspect. So in sports, I was good, but in school, I was behind. And so I got called up to the board because I thought I knew division. And the teacher asked me, and I said yes, because I thought I did. And then I went up to the board and I didn't. And so, and then she snapped at me about saying ma'am, because they didn't say ma'am in Stillwater. So I wasn't trying to be disrespectful, but I just said yes instead of yes, ma'am. And at U-High, you say yes, ma'am. No, like yes, ma'am, yes, sir. And I missed on that. And she was not very nice about it. So there was a little bit of a transition. And it's funny now, but my dad did have me sit on his lap at a recruiting function and then try to make a joke about it. And I melted. He still talks about making me cry on accident at a recruiting function.
The new head coach's daughter. She doesn't know division, and she's not polite.
Exactly. And then my parents tell the story. Apparently she told them, I don't remember this part, that the next time she asked me if I knew something, I said, no, ma'am, I don't.
So you got it all right that time. You just said, no, you don't know exactly. It. And you got the ma'am in.
I learned.
Yeah, lower the bar, low expectations. No, I don't know it. And then if it turns out you do, yeah, you're good to go.
Exactly.
Over-promise, over-deliver. Under-promise, mm-hmm. Over-deliver, rather.
Exactly.
So, Bubba, go ahead.
Yeah, transitioning back to that time at LSU, your dad became, very well known in addition to all the wins that the Tigers were piling up on Saturdays, for his press conferences. And, now as someone who's in the media, what are some of your memories of, seeing those clips, whether it's on SportsCenter or what have you? Definitely, I always love hearing your dad and then talk to the media after games.
Yeah, we always went to the press room. We were always at the walk and then the post-game press conference. It was something that he was very, very sweet about wanting us there. So we were at all of those. And I just remember feeling for him, kind of just you like have another level of respect for the game and for coaching and for what goes into it. And there would be so many times that I would hear him talking about something at home and then he wouldn't be saying that to the media. And that's something I absolutely operate through that lens now, where it's like, if, you know, if someone's playing or not playing and I'm like, I wonder about that decision, I know that there's more to the decision. And I think that it's a good lens to operate through, that you don't know everything just because you're in the media. And I also just, you know, we're in a different era now with NIL and stuff, but there's still young people and there's still kids that are doing their best. And so I still, you know, admire my dad for the way he defended the players and was a player's coach in the sense of the media. He player's coach probably overall, but also in the sense of the media.
One that really stands out in my mind very quickly, Kyle, is the one I'm trying to recall. It was, I want to say, in the last 2 or 3 years of his time there at LSU, you know, where he's talking about, and you grab him and you give him a big hug and a kiss. So you probably recall the one I'm referencing. I think it was after a home game.
give him a big hug and a kiss on the lips if you're a girl. Yeah.
Yep.
We remember that one. There's a lot of them that we remember, and I still get made fun of for grass. And even with my girlfriends now, when I go to get a green juice, they're like, yeah,
eat some grass. Well, so yeah. What was the, I remember, you know, your dad was called the Mad Hatter. I never understood that. He wore a white LSU hat. Everybody wears a friggin' hat. I never got that.
It had to do with his fourth down calls. It was about being a gambler. The Mad Hatter I think in history they were crazy. And so I think that that was the reference. And I disagree with the nickname.
I understand that. Yeah, because he was a bit of a gambler. But it just always seemed like, I don't know, maybe it became...
He wore it a little high on his head too. He wouldn't like pull the hat all the way down. And I feel like now they could have made him some shallow hat so it wouldn't just been sitting up there unfilled.
Right. But it never looked that odd to me. I just remember everybody focusing on his hat. I get the reference in terms of being a gambler going forward on fourth down, et cetera. But I was like, well, what the hell? It's just a white LSU hat. I never quite understood that.
Yeah, I don't know. He's a white hat guy. And I don't think I've ever seen him in a non-white hat that I can think of. Even downstairs, there's just, you know, 50 white hats. So I don't know. I don't think he wore them that. I agree. I don't think it was worn that crazy. I think it just, between being crazy and being a traditional hat guy, it happened.
Yeah. Yeah, Kyle, the Mad Hatter, right?
Yeah, that's what I was talking about. Yeah.
Right. Cool. Exactly. But some of those calls, and then when they would pan out, I'd love the reaction on the sideline, just, you know, kind of kick back, laughing, grinning from ear to ear.
Yeah, they were great memories. And on the anniversaries, or sometimes, you know, former players will repost stuff, and it's always fun to see that game film and dad's reactions to that, and know now too, being in the working world, how hard he worked at it. And he didn't complain about it. He was so fulfilled by it and worked so hard, but without, obviously it was very like self-made motivated work. So I didn't think anything of it. And now that I'm in the working world and know how many hours he put in and what he did and the way he did it, I admire his work ethic and professionalism even more.
So, you know, after the seasons were over, you know, that be the 07 season or another season, did you guys have, you know, yearly vacations, things you guys always did during the summer before the season started as a family? So talk about some of the traditions you guys had together as a family once football season was over, where you got to spend more time with your dad.
Yeah. So I think one of the misconceptions about my dad was that he was the personality made him, not make him seem laid back, but I think he got this reputation for being different than an Urban Meyer and Nick Saban as far as being fun. And he was a workaholic like the rest of them. So as much as we absolutely went on some vacations, he was in the office a lot of the off season. He wasn't, you know, my brothers both coach, so I know some staffs that get more time and some that get less, and he was in the office a lot. So we would go to Destin as a family over the 4th of July every year, and we would do family practices. So that meant that everyone had to be practiced by dad in order in at a random ball field in Destin, and we would do family workouts. So even his vacation was pretty sporty. And we have some amazing memories from family vacations on dad coaching us, because he felt like it was his opportunity to coach and parent. So it was like this like boot camp of a high dose of dad just being in full force. And that man woke up on one every single day. I've never seen a more morning person. Just his feet hit the floor and his intensity was like this. So even if he drove us to school or something, it was like we were gonna get a pep talk about every class, every practice, anything.
Did that ever get on your nerves?
So I mean, he thought, we would joke that he was the family professor, family doctor, family, you know, you name it, he was it. So, but the family practices were fun, and we would go to the beach. We were beach family, and it was 5 hours from Baton Rouge to Destin. So we would get there once a year, not nearly as much as we probably thought or planned to when we got the house there, but that was our place and we had a great time.
Did the morning pep talk before school ever get on your nerves? That would have drove me crazy.
Oh my gosh, it drove me crazy. And you'd get this pep talk, and then you would know that at night you were probably going to like a recruiting function and he was going to act like it was your social life. So I didn't realize, like, I look back at it now and I think it's so sweet just how involved he wanted to be. And people ask, oh, well, like your dad was gone a lot. And I'm like, he was there. Don't you worry. He was there plenty. And so, no, I mean, I feel like it kind of, his intensity and the way he communicated with my mom, he made the most of every moment. And I never felt like I had a distant dad. We would take him dinner at ops and we would watch the end of practice and then eat dinner with him. So some of the stuff that I thought was normal is the stuff that was weird, but I know that I felt like my dad was there. So that was obviously a huge win in my life. And I'm not one of those people that look back and I'm like, oh, like my dad missed so much. My dad got to everything he could get to. He would bust it across town for one event at the end of a swim meet if he could. So I think some of those moments where he did make it there, you kind of forget about the times he didn't, because he worked so hard to get there when he could.
Did you ever have a situation at a swim meet, for example, or it doesn't have to be a swim meet, but it just, you know, wherever, where, you know, it was something for you or just something in public where you guys were as a family and you had to deal with a LSU fan that decided he didn't like your dad?
Yes. My parents probably two main ones that stand out in my mind. When I was little, and I don't remember this one, but apparently it must've been young in Baton Rouge, but I don't remember. So some kid, a boy, came up to me and said that his dad said he could call better plays than mine. And apparently, according to the story, I told him, "We'll tell your dad I can shake you like a rag doll." So my dad loves that one. That's the one that he likes to tell. And then when I was, I want to say 12, there was a state championship meet in Baton Rouge and for all of Louisiana. And there was a girl so High Point has scored on 7 events, and we had each won 3 and gotten second in the other 3 to each other on the 7th event. So this is day 3. We're swimming the same 7 events. And she touched me out in a 400 free long course in the summer. My dad was there. And her dad highlighted it, wrote High Point, and then asked my dad to autograph it. And the girl's very nice. We kind of loosely keep in touch. She was not like that. But I still look back on it and I'm like, yeah, well, I swim in college. Like, I still look at that one. I'm like, no, 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 that was too far. After 7 events, like, it's one thing if you just beat me on High Point, but we won 3, you won 4 events and I won 3 events and you're going to have my dad autograph it? Come on.
Did he autograph it?
Yes, he did.
Okay, well, that was good for your dad.
I mean, yeah, he was nice.
Were
he was
you
a good
mad
sport
at him
about
for
it.
Autographing it?
I said the same thing. I was like, you didn't do it, did you? He was like, you'll get her next year.
But you were mad at him for autographing it at the time.
Yeah.
Yeah. He did the right thing. He did the right thing by autographing it.
Yeah.
I'm sure you see that now, but when you're 12,
oh, yeah,
you're probably
for
like,
sure. Well, exactly. I mean, it didn't happen again. And it's funny. And it was, you know, her dad meant it in good fun. And, you know, we both had a lot to be proud of on the meet, and it was fine.
You're talking about your swimming career. I referenced earlier in the show just about how you swam for the Longhorns, of course, and tell us about that process of going through the recruiting and, you know, what your options were and, you know, how you settled on the University of Texas.
That is another place where naiveness came into play as far as what I had grown up seeing. You know, I saw the five stars come through where we rolled out the red carpet and took them to Texas Day Brazil, and they had, you know, offers from Alabama and LSU and every program that they would want to go to. And so I thought that, you know, working hard and doing the right things was going to lay out those same opportunities for me. And then I got to college and to the recruiting process, and I realized, you know, swimming's a partial scholarship sport. And it's just way different. It's not the five stars that we've seen dad calling late at night, you know? So I think that it was tough in the beginning for that for me. But in the end, I had offers from, you know, solid offers from Texas and Michigan, which were my two dream schools growing up. And then I took an official to LSU and Auburn. I took my Auburn official visit for the LSU-Auburn game. And LSU beat Auburn by 2 points, and I was in the Auburn student section. And then my dad showed up in a police escort to a college party where people were trying to jump the fence, thinking that it was the police just showing up to crash the party, to bust the party. And then the kids had to walk back in and be like, no, it's just Smacker's dad, it's fine. So I knew I wasn't going to Auburn because of that. And then I kind of wanted to do my own thing. And so I loved the LSU swim coach at the time. He was my club coach. He was wonderful. That official visit was wonderful. And of course, we went to an LSU game and got to see the fam. And I was at a boarding school at the time. So it was actually nice to go see my family. And I mean, LSU will always just have the special place, probably the most special place in my heart. And so it was a tough decision to not go, but I knew I wasn't going to, if that makes sense. And then between Texas and Michigan, it was just the official visits and where my heart was. And the Texas decision was a great one. I absolutely love Texas, and I'm so proud of being a Longhorn, and that athletic department and the education, all of it was first class.
Yeah, that's something you hear, you know, be it, you know, a legacy recruit in some cases, you know, or someone in your position, you know, where your parent is either a coach or an employee of the university, and, you know, making that decision, do I want to stay at home or do I want to go elsewhere? What all went into that for you? Obviously, you said Texas was a dream school of yours.
Yeah. My parents wanted me to go to my boarding school for high school and then come back for college. So when I first left home, that was the agreement. And I think I just wanted to be, I'm so proud of being a Miles and being Smacker Miles. And, you know, when people bring up actually the coach's kid thing, I had a basketball coach recently tell me, I knew you were a coach's kid. I just knew. And then, you know, if people say that, like, oh, you have this or that in common with your dad, there's nothing that makes me prouder than that. But I just knew I wanted to be my own person. I didn't want to just be Les Miles' daughter at LSU. And growing up, my parents very much so guarded against us just being that. They wanted us to be our own people. They wanted us to be independent. They wanted us to do what we wanted, and they wanted us to do it ourselves, to be honest. So I think that I felt like I would have the opportunity to feel more confident in that merit if I went somewhere else. And I also knew that I am loyal as they come. And so I knew that if something happened and things went south at LSU while I was in school, which they did, that I would probably have a hard time with it. And I did. And I think that it was the perfect decision and one that I'm really proud of having made, but more so proud of the way my parents parented to set me up to make that decision.
Yeah, no doubt. And it's good to blaze your own path sometimes. Wanted to ask you, being you brought it up about your dad being let go at LSU while you were at Texas in 16. How do you know, you weren't in LSU, you weren't in Baton Rouge, you didn't go there. So you were in Austin when your dad got fired, I'm assuming. How did you take that? What were your thoughts on that? And did you know, you say you love LSU, you have a lot of love for them. So I guess you got over it. So just talk about that, your feelings on that at the time and your feelings on that now.
I had a shoulder surgery, and so I was able to go to the Auburn game, and I was right there in the corner of the end zone where the pass, they said the second had ticked off, and I was upset in the stands. And then I thought we would have a third game. So I didn't think it was going to happen the next day, but there had been a bunch of false alarms the year before. So I landed on a connection from Atlanta to Dallas, and then I was in Dallas and I got a text from someone I wasn't even friends with that said, "Hey, your dad was let go." I called my mom and she answered right away, but she hadn't heard it. And so I kept calling my dad and he wasn't answering his phone. And basically my mom found out officially from me and my grandpa. And then I found out from someone I wasn't friends with. And then my little brother found out from his high school football coach. And so he went straight to ops. He just drove straight there. And he was the one that packed up my dad's stuff with him. So at the time I was really shocked and I was in hysterics in DFW. I'm crying so hard. People, strangers that I do not know are bringing me tissue boxes. They're like, "What's wrong? Is there anything we can do?" And I'm like, it's my dad and he won't answer me. And so then I see one of the Texas strength coaches is on my flight from Dallas back to Austin. And so I'm like, I can't let him know that I'm crying about this. I'm sure he knew I was crying, exactly what I was crying about. So I put on some chick flick on the screen in front of me on the flight when I board the plane. And then I don't make eye contact while he's walking by. So to this day, I still laugh about the fact that I wanted my weight strength coach to think that I was crying about a chick flick and not my dad being let go at that time. But I mean, from there, I just knew that they were real tears, you know, like it was, we were upset about how it ended, the legacy. We just got super attached. And I look back now and it's like, there's nothing wrong with that attachment. It's not like I would have rather been emotionless about it or not cared about Baton Rouge or the people. And so it was hard, but it just, you know, it takes time. And I think, you know, my dad was so tough about it. He would never, he couldn't say anything about him. He had, to this day, has never said anything the way he would just take it. But I just knew that there was nothing that would break his heart more. And so that's why it got to me.
Yeah. And it's understandable that it got to you. You know, it's interesting to me that you felt like you had to hide it from the strength coach, but you know, I guess as you get older, you know, you realize that emotions are nothing to be ashamed of. If you got to cry, you got to cry. And then,
yeah,
you know, he knew damn well why you were crying. I want a chick flick. If he didn't at the time, he found out soon thereafter.
Exactly. A coach's wife had told my mom once that if you don't cry when you leave, it wasn't worth going. And I look back on it and I agree with that. I think the only way to go through that life is to invest in it and to invest in the people around you and the places and the student athletes. And with that, you know, comes heartache on the back end if it doesn't end well. But what are you going to do? Not have it try to end well or not, you know, give it to all while you're there? It doesn't make any sense.
It's the old adage, better to have loved than lost and never loved at all. Same applies with that kind of situation.
Yes.
Exactly. So the question that you probably get asked more than any other question in the world, do you know what it is before I even ask it?
What your nickname, Smacker, where'd it come from?
Yeah, you got it. Yep.
Yeah. Okay, so it's a good story, and I feel like it's a podcast story because my parents say, they're like, "Oh, she smacked her lips together when she was a baby." And it's like, that is maybe a fifth of the story. So they thought I was going to be a boy. My mom was a tomboy, you know, short curly hair basketball coach. She'd never worn any makeup in her life. And so my parents were excited. The doctor wasn't supposed to tell them that I was going to be a boy. They didn't want to know. So when he looked at my dad and was like, "Oh, coach, you're going to be so happy." They were upset with him, but then they thought I was going to be a boy. So they came up with boy names. So I was born. They didn't have anything ready. And my mom straight up says, "I just wanted to leave the hospital." So they went with Catherine Ann, and she admits that she didn't love it on spot. And so then when I started smacking my lips together, they started referencing me as Smacker, baby Smacker. And so my mom thought it was just their thing. But then one time she went to the Michigan football athletic department and they were saying, "How's baby Smacker?" My mom was like, "Les, like, come on, you're telling people we call her that? We, you know, that wasn't the plan." And he was like, yeah, just go with it. So then in Stillwater, I was baby Smacker from, you know, 9 months old to 4. Then in Dallas, I went to first grade and I said my name was Smacker because my parents hadn't told me anything else. And so the kids laughed.
Wait a minute. Did you really, when you first went to school, really think your Christian name was Smacker?
Absolutely. Oh, I absolutely, my parents purposely did not tell me anything else. When people will ask if my parents call me Catherine when I'm in trouble, and I'm like, I have never heard them say it. My mom will say it with her chest, like it's nothing to strangers. Like, we'll like meet someone, my mom will be like, "This is my daughter Smacker," and just like roll through it like the person's gonna, and they're like, you can tell that they're kind of like Samantha, like any other S names that I mishear it. But I mean, to this day, my parents will not tell anyone Catherine. If I hear Catherine, I think someone has my medical records. Okay, but anyway, so first grade, went there, cried, went by Smacker for first grade, or went by Catherine for first grade in Dallas one time. And then we moved back to Stillwater. And that was when it was just done. Everyone in town, they drew out the baby, but everyone was like, Smacker's back. And then a swim coach put in the heat sheet that way. And I don't really remember my college coaches asking much. They had seen it as, you know, you go back through USA Swimming records from the time I was eight, and they had seen Smacker. And so there was no question with them what they were going to call me. So then even at Texas, I would be enrolled in classes and my academic advisors would put, you know, the preferred name as Smacker. And even in lecture halls, like I'd get called out Smacker and I'd just act like it was normal. So to this day, it's on my driver's license and medical stuff as Catherine, but that's the only place. If someone has that, I'm like, oh, why? What do you know?
You can Google it. It's on Google.
Yeah.
So have you ever run into a situation in school where a teacher or a coach refused to call you Smacker?
One time it was like a boss and he was like, oh, I don't know about that. Do you have a real name? And I said, yeah, Catherine. And within 2 days, he was calling me Smacker. He was like, I get it now. You're a Smacker. And I was like, yeah, okay, it's fine. And beyond that, every now and then I'll be at a coffee shop and say Smacker and the person will be like, that's not funny. Or like, getting a sandwich and they'll think that I'm making a joke or want them to call it on the intercom or something. And in that scenario, I realize that they just don't get it. And I feel really bad. And I'm like, oh, I'm so sorry. It's a nickname. That's really what I go by, but you can say Catherine. And I always say Smacker off the top of my head, but in that situation, it's like, oh, I'm not confrontational about that. I don't blame them but it's just, I'm not making a joke.
Yeah, you can imagine growing up with a nickname like Bubba. And some of the things that I heard, in elementary school, my elementary school refused to go by nicknames, so I went by my middle name, Brett. And then in middle school, the first day of sixth grade, I was at a private Christian school. We went to a music class, and the teacher was going through the roster, and he said, Thomas Rosenbaum. I said, I go by Bubba. And she said, no, really, what's your name? And I said, no, I go by Bubba. And she said, if you say that again, you're going to go to the principal's office. So you can imagine, like, I was pretty shy and reserved. And when I was like, I said, that's great. I'm going to get sent to the principal's office for telling her my name. But, all my classmates vouch for me because several of them, I had grown up playing sports and they're like, no, that's what he goes by.
Yeah. Oh, so, that's sweet. Yeah. It wasn't meant for local news, but when I got back to sports, it's been fine in sports.
Yeah.
my favorite Bubba nickname story that he's told me, Smacker, not that we're going to make this the Bubba podcast all of a sudden, but,
no, I love it.
He dated a girl one time and, they refused to call him Bubba only would call him Thomas. How long did that last? One date too?
Yeah. I said, this isn't going to work. She said, I really don't think I can call you that. And I was like, oh, well,
you have to call people what they want to be called.
Yeah, but, within reason. Within reason. Yeah. Certainly a nickname like Bubba or Smacker. If you got a problem with that, it's probably your problem.
Yeah, exactly. So going to the comments, we have several folks chiming in on Facebook and YouTube. Want to mix some of these in. We'll start off with James down in Hattiesburg. He says, two questions. Are we keeping Coach Miles away from eating grass, LOL? And how is Coach doing? Will we ever see him lead a program again?
He's doing well and he will not be leading any programs, but he watches Pat McAfee every day and his personal trainer in Naples played in Miami and JJ feels like home and they have a great time together. So he is working out and he talks to my brothers about football all the time. But he won't be coaching again. And as far as eating grass, guys, he was bending down our walk today. And I was like, oh, no, we got to touch the grass. No, we picked a piece of grass, didn't eat it. But he is still a fan of grass for sure.
And James, you heard it from Smacker. Coach Miles is a fan of grass.
Yes.
And James went on to say, I was actually at Coach Miles' first game as a head coach when Oklahoma State played Southern Miss in Hattiesburg. James is, like I said, a resident of Hattiesburg and a big fan of the Golden Eagles.
Yeah. Oh, it was really special all football season getting to talk to the coaches and knowing their interactions that they'd had with them, even if it wasn't, you know, an obvious interaction. Sometimes it was just at a convention or, you know, in passing, and at all of those memories of him and just even something like that, where it's like, I didn't even know his first game was there. And so I learn new things about him all the time through the sports world. And that is a very rewarding part of what I'm doing.
How did you get into to sports broadcasting? And, you know, obviously, you know, you have a background in athletics. You were a swimmer at Texas. Your dad's Les Miles. But still, that doesn't just automatically qualify you to be a sideline reporter. So how did you get into sports broadcasting? And, you know, like I said, you did such a great job during that Rice East Carolina game that we were watching. You know, and your name, you're memorable. Your name, you do a good job. And then we, lo and behold, you're Les Miles' daughter. But how did you get into that?
It was what I always wanted to do. None of us four kids ever really had that childhood, I want to be a teacher, I want to be a police officer thing. And I wanted to be a sports reporter by the time I was 10. By the time we moved to Baton Rouge, that's what I wanted to do. And I would see the, you know, the sports reporters and the sideline girls come through, and the way that they, you know, their job description sounded like it'd be fun to me. And at the time, I definitely didn't think of it as TV. I thought of it as a sports job. I didn't want to be a swim coach, but I wanted to be in sports. And so I definitely learned a lot about, you know, makeup and broadcast and cameras and editing and video and technology after school. But as far as knowing what I wanted to do, I did always know. And I did an internship at Longhorn Network at the end of being at Texas. And that was great. The people are wonderful. And then I did an internship at Cowboys. And that's kind of how I started to make connections in Dallas. And then from there, it's been just a lot of freelance, a lot of digital games, and a lot of teaching swim lessons, to be honest. So I'm just now getting to the point where I'm, you know, getting true sideline reps and getting to have the opportunities to get to where I want to go as far as getting better to get there. So it is such a tough job, but it's rewarding in the sense that it is highly motivating. And I, you know, I love looking forward to weeks as far as it feeling like a traditional game week. And, you know, I do the prep, and then I love to meet with the coaches and learn about the teams. And I do love it. So I'm really thankful that the parts of broadcast that I didn't understand or was completely naive to, I've kind of gotten the enough of getting the hang of it and learned enough about it to know that I absolutely was right in wanting to do that.
Yeah, you mentioned doing digital content. The Rice East Carolina game with Keith Rafferson was on ESPN Plus. What is the most high profile game you've done so far?
I just did ESPN Plus. I was doing a lot of the ESPN Plus American games this fall, so. The highest profile game. I mean, I've done a game on CBS from CBS in 1 year, and it was CBS Sports based on programming the next year. So I've done some of that. I've done some random bigger events, but a lot of the most relevant reps are just those. That's what I want to do is sideline. So those football sideline games were important to me.
Yeah, you did a great job. You know, well, I also remember watching you. Maybe you did our game with Florida Atlantic also at Boca Raton. And you do a great job, and you're not just blowing smoke, and not just because you're Les Miles' daughter, but what is the reaction like from coaches and players towards you once they realize who you are? Do you feel like they treat you with more respect, or do you feel like they're just so wound up in the moment it doesn't matter?
I don't ever tell anyone, and it's gone a bunch of different ways, but they're all so wonderful. I absolutely loved. I know you guys are East Carolina people, and that staff was absolutely wonderful. I think I ended up covering you guys three or four times. And no, it was definitely four times because it was ECU, UTSA, Florida Atlantic, the one you mentioned at Rice, and I think there was one other. So anyways, getting to know the staffs is so much fun. And I think sometimes they don't know and they realize after, and they'll come up to me and apologize. I'm like, there's nothing to apologize for. You weren't supposed to know that. And then sometimes they know, sometimes they'll be like, how do you know about sports? Like they'll almost like get tipped off to it somehow. And then I'll be like, oh, well, my dad was a coach. And they'll be like, where, you know, I'm not super forthcoming with it, but it is, I feel like every coach that I met had a story about having met him or, you know, something that they knew about him or someone that they knew that knew him. And those stories were really, really sweet.
Do you feel like you're more knowledgeable than most so-called sideline girls?
I think yes, in some ways. And then also I feel like the level of football knowledge I have is like it's a humbling level, because as much as I know, you know, for a girl, it's hard. It's a hard game. And my brothers and dad can still talk me under a table in, you know, a matter of sentences. But I do find with like my level of knowledge, I think it's very fitting, because sometimes when I'm asking the coaches a very like humble follow-up question that it's like, I genuinely want to understand it, then you realize the guys in the room are also listening and taking notes on whatever you're saying. So some of those moments make me laugh, because as much as you know about football, the coaches still know it at such a high level. So I think yes and no. I think if you haven't played or coached at a high level, I feel like there's a lot that you don't know. But at the same time, I know a lot of it. Yes.
And one thing you probably know how to do better than, you know, somebody who at least is new to the job, you know how to approach coaches probably and make them comfortable, or know when they're not in the mood to talk to you and answer very many questions.
Yeah. There were a couple of times this season where, you know, if it was a coaching staff that wasn't happy with the way things were going, they'd be like, well, we're happy to see you. Like, happy and thankful it's me, and knowing that I know what not to ask, and also just that I'm genuinely for them. I think the whole notion that reporters don't have feelings and like are completely unbiased is just not true. I fall for any good coaching staff that's doing things the right way and is kind and for the kids and, you know, respectful and does a good job communicating with me. It's like, I can't help but being, you know, hoping that they have a great year and hoping that the ball bounces their way. So I think that, you know, I enjoy getting to know them, but then I also get invested myself.
We have several East Carolina fans chiming in. William Landon on YouTube says, great job covering the American this year. Keep up the good work. And then Daniel Hill Sr. on Facebook says, Smackers, the GOAT, sideline reporter for ECU games.
Thank you, Daniel. Thank you, guys. It was so much fun. I will always have a soft spot for ECU because of the number of games that I covered with them this year. And I don't know. I feel like I'll always remember the staff and, you know, coach, and some of the memories from those games will always be my, you know, first most humbling memories, but also fun ones.
The games that you worked, you referenced Rice, UTSA, Florida Atlantic, obviously all road games. Mm-hmm. Was that fourth one, was that another road game, or was that at Dowdy-Ficklin in Greenville?
All road games.
Okay.
And we started joking about it. I was like, I know, I feel like I need to see the place. And I would run into ECU fans the last game, because my final game was Florida Atlantic. It was back-to-back at Florida Atlantic, but that one was at Rice. So my last game of you guys was the Florida Atlantic, at Florida Atlantic. And you guys had fans on the road and won that one. And then coach's interview was so great. He was getting emotional looking at all the ECU fans and the players running over for him. It was one of my favorite interviews of the season. And he was just so genuine and great. And so, but at that game, there were fans that would be like, hey, Smack. I'd be like, hey, wait, you came all the way here? That's awesome. And so I feel like you guys also remind me of just an amazing, you know, having not been there, just an amazing community where you know, you're bought into the college and then it matters. And it's not, you know, there's more to it than just, you know, what the record is in that moment. And also so cool that it matters that much. I love that.
East Carolina, if you've obviously never been here, it is definitely a small SEC environment. Our stadium holds 50,000. We routinely have over 40,000 in there. We always rank in the top one, two, or three for group of five attendance. It's a great atmosphere. We were terrible this year, 2-10. But when we're good, when the Pirates are good, Dowdy-Ficklin You hopefully you'll get to cover a game in there at some point, because and that will be much better this year. Coach did a great job working the portal. So we'll be much better this coming season. There's no doubt about it. We couldn't be much worse. Maybe, who knows? I don't know what, if you've got any assignments yet, if you know what the fall, do you know what the fall holds for you? Are you going to be doing more ESPN Plus? Are you going to be doing some network games, or do you know at this time?
I don't know at this time. Everything ended well, and I think I'll be doing games next year. That's kind of the extent of what I know.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. If you're not, I'd be shocked. I think it would be by your choosing if you didn't do games. So I got a feeling if ESPN or CBS, somebody is smart. I love you covering digital games for the American, but no, I think you're going to be on network before too long.
Thank you. I'm hopeful, and but honestly, I don't know. People ask this too, that like, does it matter what game? And I don't know. The coaches care, the players care, and I care. And having been a swimmer, it's like, it matters. And so I had a great time with the American this year.
Because of who you are, and you're very natural on the sideline, your personality, and again, who you are. If the SEC network, if ESPN doesn't have enough sense to put you doing SEC network games on the sideline, I mean, come on, Bubba, what do you think?
Yeah, I definitely agree. And Richard Allsbrook chimed in on Facebook. You were talking about your path into broadcasting and your passion for what you do. He says, who have you met since broadcasting, or maybe even before you started working in the sports industry, that you've been a huge fan of, perhaps received some advice from?
It's such a good question. There's so many. I mean, admiring the girls that were doing it was my first impression of wanting to be that, just how, knowledgeable and respectful and hardworking they were. I think that, I've met a lot of the big ones, and they've all been wonderful. And Tom Rinaldi was, I met him doing an interview, and he was interviewing me for a ESPN something package. And he was actually one of the ones that first was actually helping me with my reel and contacts, and just very uplifting and like exactly what you see. And I thought that was really cool. And then the women are just so great. Maria, I've shadowed her, Maria Taylor. She's not with ESPN anymore, but she's at, NBC now, and she's great. Holly Rowe is amazing, and I think she does such a good job of getting the story. Who's not going to talk to Holly? She's so widely trusted in the industry, and everyone I've come in contact with has just been wonderful and helpful, and I love that when the women are so confident that they help you with anything.
Final thing I have for you, as you referenced earlier, your brothers played, and then now they're coaching. Mom that played at Central Michigan, played basketball, that is. Obviously, your dad's background playing and coaching. And so when you guys weren't going through camp, so to speak, your dad wasn't putting you through workouts, whether you're around the TV watching a football game or whatever the sport may be, what is that like?
Post game was always stand around the kitchen island with snacks and literally reenact the game. So we were a big movie family. So we did a lot of Boys Club, won the movie vote a lot, but they like more chick flicks than they admit. So we got our rom-coms in, but the boys love any and all movies. So we always did a good job with, we didn't just talk about sports, and I feel like we all have big personalities. So we were never short on anything to talk about. And with four kids in the house, just talking about all our social lives was enough. And we also run a wide range. So I'm 29 and my little sister's 20 playing softball at UCF. So we have a lot of, two boys, two girls, and both parents. So a lot of big personalities under one roof, and we all like to be outside. We like to work out. We like to, watch our shows. I'm probably the worst TV watcher, but we all watch it. So we have a lot in common as a family, which made it very easy to find things to do.
Smacker, I had we're closing in here on 8 o'clock, which is your cutoff time, but I wanted to ask you real fast, we can get it in. about dating in high school, having brothers, and your dad being Les Miles. How did that go?
It didn't. I wasn't allowed out of my dad's sight. My parents would watch me. They would walk me into the movies and then see where I was sitting and who I was with. I wasn't allowed to ride in other people's cars. My little brother has some stories for you, and I have his stories because I was only allowed to hang out with him. But no, I did not get out of my parents' sight. And I mean, I understood it to some extent, and I don't blame them now.
Well, I'm glad you look at it that way now. I bet you didn't then.
Yeah, they were strict. They were super strict.
Kyle, we had East Carolina baseball play-by-play voice and Scott Rogers chiming in and said he certainly admires the work you do as well. And so just wanted to get that in from Scott, better known as Scooter Rogers.
Thank you. And I enjoyed all the ECU people, so it's good to hear from another one.
Well, we really appreciate your time tonight. You've been very generous, and you know, we'd love to have you on some of our other shows, you know, this fall, or maybe even during the summer months leading into football season to talk a little college football.
That sounds great. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Macker.
Bye.
Bye.
We appreciate everyone tuning in. Be sure to follow us on social media at TheSportsOBJ on X. And then also we can be found on TikTok and Instagram at The Sports Objective. Like and follow us on Facebook and subscribe to our YouTube channel. You know, but for Kyle Barber, Smacker Miles, I'm Bub Rosenbaum. You've been watching and listening to The Coach's Kid right here on The Sports Objective. We appreciate everyone tuning in, and we'll talk to you real soon.